Professor, if you're talking, I think you're muted.
Thank you. So I was. Thank you so much. Okay, so good morning. The plan for today was to continue with integrals. And situation that we're in now is that we've defined this concept of Riemann integrals, and they work pretty well, and they enable us to deal with functions that are more general than the ones we could differentiate to lots of integrable functions that are not differentiable. But there are still, and so the idea here is to try to expand the class of functions on which some sort of integration makes sense. And so we'll do that in three ways. Basically, these are improper integrals, but there are a few different detailed concepts, absolute and principal value examples. Okay, so let me just start with then the definition. So so we'll start with the improper integral. So if we have a function which is not just a function, so f, and it's defined on some interval a, b, and the picture that we want to imagine here is that I have a function that has some kind of problem at a, which is why it's only defined on the open interval, but it's pretty nice otherwise. And so this is the kind of function that we can't yet integrate. It's not really integrable. Whenever I move a little bit in from A, then it is. So for all epsilon greater than zero, we have that F is Riemann integrable, at least as long as we stay at least epsilon away from A. Okay, so just as in my picture here, as long as I start over here at a plus epsilon, then this part is Riemann integrable. Okay, then we write as an integral the limit. So this is the standard improper integral. So this is an integral from a to b of f of x dx as a name for the limit. As epsilon goes to zero from the right, of the integral from a plus epsilon up to b. And that integral from a plus epsilon, that one makes sense because that one is Riemann integrable there. And so then we can just take this limit. Now this limit may or may not exist, but in any case, we'll just use this notation to represent that limit. So, and call it the, improper integral of f. On this interval a, b. Okay. All right, so that's the basic definition. Let's see. And as I said, let me just note, that this may or may not exist. Okay, and it should be familiar from Math 21 that this is a useful thing to do. And let me then just the same thing for the infinite intervals. So this is another definition. I guess this one was in the text, 12.24 in the text, and this one's 12.26. You can also do the same thing for unbounded domains. So if we have f function from a to infinity, of course, we only define things with Riemann integrable on bounded domains. So this couldn't be Riemann integrable on the whole thing, but it can be on any bounded domain. So for all n bigger than zero, for all n, we have that f is Riemann integrable up through n at least. Okay, so that's a nice bounded domain. It makes sense to talk about being Riemann integrable there. Then again, we just write the integral from a to infinity as the limit as n goes to infinity of the Riemann integrable that does exist of the function from end A to end. Okay, so that's just some. All right, so let me just start with a couple of standard examples, the ones that one should keep in mind, which have to do with whether this is blowing up fast, too fast for this to exist or not. And it's the drawings look awfully similar, but some of them do and some of them don't. And so just see. So the example, it's a standard example, 12.25, which is just a power of x. Okay, and this is the way that I like to draw it. Let me take the integral from 0 to 1 of dx divided by x to the 1 minus epsilon. Okay, and just try to compute this. So this is equal to, so by definition, of course, this is clearly not Riemann integrable because it's unbounded here at 0. Okay, so that's a problem. So this is going to be then, by definition, the improper integral. So it's the so it's the limit as epsilon goes to 0 from the right. Oh, sorry. I'm using epsilon now for two things. I should not do that. So let me rename this one alpha. Okay, so I have two different names. Okay, so the limit the epsilon goes to 0 from the right and of the integral from epsilon up to 1 of dx over epsilon minus alpha, and that's an integral that we can do. And so this is then the limit as epsilon goes to 0 from the right. And we just do this integral, and it's x to the alpha divided by alpha. Okay, evaluated from 1 to epsilon, just using direct integration. And so then this is a limit as, well, see, let me just pull out the limit. So that, first I can just plug in 1, so I get 1 over alpha. And then I get minus the limit as epsilon goes to 0 of epsilon of the alpha over alpha. And this is what happens if the function, if alpha is positive and otherwise it's undefined. So, so this is equal to a 1 over alpha. If alpha is bigger than 0 and otherwise it's not defined. So it depends on what the power is here. If we divide it by something with a power less than 1, then it works and we get this number. And if it's divided by a power bigger than 1, then it does not exist. That's the useful. They look pretty similar when you graph them, but one of them diverges and the other converges. Let's see, and then example 12.27. We can do exactly the same thing with this integral to infinity. So let's take the integral from 0 to 1 of dx over x to the 1 minus alpha and do a substitution so that we end up with infinity. So let's take y equals 1 over x. Okay, and so then that's the same as x equals 1 over y. And so dx is equal to 1. Minus dy over y squared. Okay, and let's see, so then we can, and when x is equal to a one, 0 and x equal to 1, those are our two bounds. Then we have y is equal to infinity, of course, and y is equal to 1. So then I can just take all this and substitute it in, and I'll get the integral now. So I guess I'm going to have two minuses, so it's going to be a plus. And then the 1 is going to turn into a 1, and I switch it around, so it goes to a the bottom, and then the 0 is going to go to infinity, so I go up there, and let's see, then my dy, I get y to the 1 minus alpha from the x to the 1 over 1 minus alpha, and I have dy over y squared, and my one of my negative signs ended up over here, so there's my negative sign. Okay, and so then this can just be rewritten. This is the integral from 1 to infinity of dy divided by, let's see, the 1 and the 2 cancel, and I get a 1. So I get y to the 1 plus alpha. And so then this is, of course, the same as what I have above. So just recopying what I have above, this is 1 over alpha if alpha is bigger than 0 and not defined otherwise. Or you could go through and do the integral again. Okay, so those are some basic examples, important examples, one to keep in mind. So ones that you should just know quickly without having to recompute. All right, so those are some improper integrals. Now, it's convenient to be able to work with these things, and if you get things bounded and use Sandwich terms and whatnot. And it's particularly nice when you have absolute convergence, and that's the one also that comes from the L1 norm. So let me just add that definition. So this is one notion of adding integrals. Now I want to actually weaken it, but strengthen it. So it's more difficult to achieve, but it's more useful, okay? And so that's this definition, 12.32. And actually most of the things you run into that are improperly integrable are absolutely so. And so that's, so it's a good thing to notice if it's true. All right, so let me start with this. There are versions for both that generalize both this 124 and 126. Let me start with this 124. So I'm going to have exactly the same hypotheses here, okay? But then instead of the limit, I'm going to look at the absolute values, okay? So that's what the which where the word absolute comes from. All right, so if we have f as above, so f is a function on the interval, half open interval from A to B. And again, we have for every positive epsilon, we have exactly the same condition that f is Riemann integrable, at least once we move epsilon away from A, just like above. And okay, but now this time, let's say that the limit of the absolute value of the integral of the absolute values exists. So limit as epsilon goes to zero from the right of the integral from A plus epsilon to B of the absolute value of f of x dx. So by the way, this has another name. Right, if we go to our norm, right, this is also the L1 norm, just as a reminder. So this is also, if I take f and restrict it to the interval from A plus epsilon to B, this is just its L1 norm. So it's another way to say that. Okay, anyway, this if this exists, if, so I have to have a conclusion to my sentence here. Those are all the hypotheses. Then we say that f is absolutely, improperly integrable. Okay, on the interval A. Okay. And of course, there's a similar statement for the infinite case. Similarly, for the interval from A to infinity, in analogy with the 12.26, this one up here. Okay, so I hope that it's clear how you would do that. So let's just again replace the integral with the integral of the absolute value. Okay, and I guess another thing to note is that this is equivalent to saying that if I take these restrictions, I get an L1 Cauchy sequence. So just as an aside, note this statement here is equivalent to being absolutely improperly integrable is equivalent to this sequence F restricted to these A plus epsilons. Let me call it A plus, I want to render so it's a sequence instead of the infinite, instead of a continuous collection, is being L1 curve. Similar to the situation that we run into before. So it's another example where we're adding in these L1 Cauchy functions and getting something useful out of it, these absolutely convergent. Okay, let me write down a theorem that follows from this, and then look at some examples and then go back and prove it. Okay, so the theorem is that, so this is 12.33, immediately after the definition, the first and most important fact about it is that this one has a nice sandwich type result. So if I have a function that is bounded by another, so absolute value of f is less than or equal to absolute value of g, and g is itself absolutely improperly integrable. On some interval a, b, or it could be the infinite interval a to infinity, I'll put it this way. Then, so there are going to be two facts that follow here. So a and b so one is that f will also be absolutely improperly integrable. Okay, and B is that F is improperly integrable. So the improper integral where I don't put in absolute values, just F itself, dx from A to B exists. Okay, so remember the one up above it is just exactly, A is just exactly the same statement except I have absolute values there, okay? But this says that I can drop those absolute values and it still exists, so I get the limit there. Okay, so now let me just do a few examples, and then come back to the proof of this theorem. So first of all, what about these examples here? Are these functions 1 over x to the 1 minus alpha for alpha bigger than 0 improperly, absolutely improperly integrable from 0 to 1, or just improperly integrable? So we look at this function on the interval 0, 1. So is it clear? Is that absolutely improperly integrable? No, sorry, if epsilon is bigger than 0. Yes, it is, right. Okay, does everyone see that? Because it's a positive function. So adding in this absolute value here, which is the only thing that changed, isn't going to have any impact. Right, it's so we already computed it with the absolute value because f is already positive. Okay, so that didn't change anything. So this is absolutely improperly integrable. And similarly, of course, 1 over x plus epsilon on the interval from 1 to infinity. Okay. So just like we had about. All right, and let's try one more example here. So what if I take something like the sine, this I think is similar to example with 12.35. So now we can start working with functions like the very first functions that we saw in this class, the sort of bizarre ones that had sine of 1 over x involved in them. So what if I take a sine of 1 over x and divide it by x to the 1 minus epsilon with epsilon bigger than 0 like before. So is it clear whether this one is absolutely improperly integrable. So if I take the integral from 0 to 1 dx, does that exist? Yep, it does, right? And so this exists. Okay, I'm up to the logic, right? So this exists because this function, this function is bounded by, this one is bounded by 1. So this whole function is bounded by this function up here. And therefore, since this one is absolutely integrable, this one is also absolutely integrable. And since it's absolutely integrable, by part B here, it's also integrable. Okay, so that's what we do. So this function sine of 1 over x over x to the 1 minus epsilon is an absolute value bounded by 1 over epsilon minus epsilon, which of course is just equal to its absolute value. It's a positive function. Okay. So this is falls into the hypothesis here for 12.33, and that tells us that this function here is improperly integrable. So it's absolutely improperly integrable by A and improperly integrable by B. Okay, any questions about that one? Okay, similarly, by the way, if we change variables, then we get the integral from 1 to infinity of sine of x over x to the 1 plus epsilon dx with epsilon greater than 0. And in fact, that's just equal to the one up above by change of variables. And it's the same change of variables, y equals I1 over x. So that's another good one. Or you could prove it directly. Let me add one more example and then go to the proof. This one, I'm not going to prove that this has the properties that I mentioned, but I hope it's plausible. So example, so first of all, let's consider the integral from up to infinity of sine of x over x. So let's see, by using the previous theorem, can I see that this integral exists? It's a trick question. So I claim I cannot, and what's wrong? Why can't I just do exactly what I did above to show that this integral exists? So if I go up above, the theorem that I would want is that the integral from zero from 1 to infinity of this function exists, but that's only true if epsilon is positive. If epsilon is 0, then this is a logarithmic singularity and this does not exist. So, and I can't use the above theorem to show that this is that this converges. Okay. So this is in fact is not absolutely improperly integrable. That's some work, but it's not so hard to go through and show. At least I hope it's plausible that's true. But it is improperly integrable. So this limit that does exist. And it's kind of a tricky and kind of a fun computation to see what it is. Dirichlet, one of his many contributions. Okay, and let's see, it's also in the text. It's example 4.36. Okay. And he actually computes a number. So if we start all the way back at zero, then we get pi over t. All right, but in any case, I hope that this is supposed to be giving some examples. So this is the sort of thing you can't, oh, let me give it a name. This is often called conditional, just like with absolute convergence of sequences. If it converges, but not absolutely, then we call it conditional. So call it, call this conditionally convergent. So those are some examples. Any questions about what this means before I go to trying to prove this theorem 12.33? Okay, so let's attempt to prove this. All right, well, there are two parts, A and B. So let's start with A and then move on to B. So part A here. Okay, so I'm trying to show that I have a absolutely improperly integrable function, F here, if I know that G is. So let me just write out what those two things would mean. So what we're interested in is the limit. Let me go right at the in terms of integral. So we're interested in the integral from a to b of f of x, except we're actually interested in the L1 norm, so it's got to be absolute value, right? Because we're in part a. So we're interested in the absolute value there. And what do we know? So this is by definition the limit as epsilon goes to zero from the right because it's improper at a. So of a plus epsilon up to b. Of absolute value f of x, dx, right? Okay, and by the rules of limits, that's less than or equal to something, integrals. So that this is less than or equal to the limit as epsilon goes to zero from the right, from a plus epsilon to b of the larger thing, which is the absolute value of g. Yet, but this one exists because the g is supposed to be absolutely improperly integrable, right? So this this exists. Okay. So what have we got? We have a this is clearly positive because we're taking or non-negative because we're taking a non-negative thing and integrating it, and we have it bounded above. And let's see if I as epsilon approaches zero. What can I say about this integral here? So here's my integral. I have this problem happening at A, and I'm going up to B, and I'm taking an epsilon close to zero and computing this area. As epsilon gets closer to zero, is that area growing? It is, right? So this is an increasing function, right, as epsilon goes to zero. And so I'm hoping that will remind you of a theorem that we have about existence of limits. As epsilon approaches zero from the right, this integral is monotone increasing. Okay, so does anyone remember what that tells us? So I have a monotone increasing function here. It's monotone increasing function here, and I'm interested in the limit, and I know that it's bounded above. And so the claim is that implies that the limit exists. So you have to reach way back to the early theorems about limits. Do you remember that? So this is hence by the monotone convergence theorem, which I think is, let's see, 3.29 in the text. We get that there is a limit, that this left-hand limit exists. So integral from a to b of the absolute value of f of x dx exists. Okay. So we appeal to a big theorem, but once we have that, then we are done. So I hope a is clear. Okay, and so then b. So b is going to make use of a. And the trick is much like what one does with absolute versus convergent sequences. And let me just draw a little picture here. So as with sequences, so I'm trying to compute this limit. Let me think about the one that goes to infinity. It's easier to draw. And I have my function here. And this time, the function's got some positive bits and some negative bits. Okay, and I'm interested in whether it converges. The point is that if I have absolute convergence, so remember the thing about absolutely convergent sequences is that the order doesn't matter. I can reorder it and it still works. And that's not true of just arbitrarily convergent sequences. And that's why absolute ones are so much nicer to work with. Same thing here. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this positive bits and I'm going to do those, and then I'm going to do these negative bits afterward. So I'm going to basically shuffle this around and reorder it and do the positive bits and then the negative bits, okay? And the positive ones are all going to be positive, so then that'll be absolute convergence. The negative ones will be negative, so they'll also be absolute, then I'll be done. That's the strategy, and let me write that out in formulas now, okay? So and so to do that, I'm going to define those two functions. Okay, so f plus will be the positive part. Okay, so that's either going to be just the function f or zero, depending on whether f of x is positive. So if f of x is bigger than or equal to zero, then it's just going to be the function f, and otherwise it's going to be zero. Okay, so it's just the positive part of my function. And similarly for the negative part, only I'm going to write this for the negative part just so that it's a positive function. So f minus will be negative the f of x or zero, and it's going to be negative f of x if negative x is positive. In other words, f of x is negative. Okay, so that's what I said about. And so when I write it that way, I get that my function is just the difference of these two positive functions, f plus minus f minus, and those two functions are themselves positive. And similarly for the negative f minus. Okay, so we have that difference. Okay, and then I'm going to do, just as I advertise, I'm first going to do this positive bit, and then I'm going to do this negative bit, and show that each of those converges separately. Let's see, so I advertised I was going to use part A. So to use part A, I need to say that what I want to do is I'm going to show that this F plus and this F minus both satisfy the hypotheses for part A. So I'm going to get that they're less than or equal to G, and then I will be done. F plus or minus x are also less than or equal to this g. So by part A, which we already proved, these two are absolutely improperly integrable and therefore improperly integrable. Okay, and so then we are pretty much done. The integral from a to b of f of x dx. So just by just writing it all out, so by definition, this is the limit as epsilon goes to zero from the right, because it's got an improperness there at A, so A plus epsilon to B, f of x dx. Okay, but now this is Riemann integrable, so I can use my usual rules for Riemann integration, and so this is then the limit as epsilon goes to zero from the right of the integral of the sum, and then I can split it into something else. So I'll just write that in both steps in one, and let me know if that's not clear. So it's going to be the integral from a plus epsilon to b of the positive part minus the integral from a plus epsilon to b of the negative part, just using linearity of integrals. Okay, and but now I can take the rule that of adding limits, okay, and then I'm done. So then this is equal to the limit epsilon goes to zero of a plus epsilon of plus minus the limit of a plus epsilon to b of f minus, and so we're done. All right, so any questions about absolute or non-absolute or conditional improper integrals? Okay, so I would like to add then one more approach to trying to add to our family of things for which integrals make sense, and that's the concept of the principal value, which is actually extremely useful mostly in complex analysis, but it also makes sense here. So let me define that. And let's see, this is a definition 12.39. Principal values. Okay, and let me just draw a little picture and then write the definition. So if I have a function and it's defined mostly on A and B, except there's some problem in the middle here at C. Okay. So the type of situation that I'm interested in is where the error on one side of C and the error on the other side of C kind of cancel, okay? And even though each one could be divergent, this one might diverge and this one might diverge, but they diverge at rates that are similar, okay? And so they cancel, and I'd like to make a formal way of defining that, okay? So that's what we're gonna do now. So, all right, so again, we're gonna be in this situation where I have my function, which is defined on A and B, except at C. Okay, so I'm missing that one point. And as long as I stay epsilon away from C, then it's still Riemann integrable on each side. Okay, so just like before, as long as I stay away from my bad point, it's Riemann integrable. So for all epsilon greater than zero, we have F is Riemann integrable on the integral AB where I remove that little epsilon neighborhood of C. Okay, so except near C, it's Riemann integrable. Then we write and this is kind of a cumbersome notation, but it is standard, so I will use it. So it's a PV, which stands for principal value, and I pretty much always put the little dots there too. So this is principal value. Okay, of the integral from A to B. So this whole thing is really this one symbol. And then f of x dx. All right, and this is just defined to be the limit as epsilon goes to zero of the sum of those integrals. But the key is that I'm going to cut it off the same amount on each side. So it'll be the integral from plus epsilon, so from C, let me start at A and then go up to C minus epsilon of f of x dx. And then I'm going to jump over epsilon by epsilon, that C there. And so then I end up at C plus epsilon and then pick up my integral again up to B. Okay, so I just skipped that little neighborhood. And the key here is that I'm skipping the same amount on each side, okay? So if I just looked at this integral by itself, that would look like one of my improper integrals. And this one also looks like one of my improper integrals. So if those both existed and I had both improper integrals, then I'd be fine. But it could be that these cancel in a very fine way. And so this one exists even though the other ones don't. And let me give an example of that. So okay, so the canonical example people think of here is 1 over x. Okay, and so I claim that this is, so first of all, we already saw above that it's not absolutely integrable. Kind of a long phrase, not absolutely and properly integrable on, minus 1, 0 or 0, 1, right? So that we already saw. And in fact, since it's positive, it's also, it's positive on one side and negative on the other. It's also not improperly integrable. On either one. Okay, but what about the principal value? Integral from minus 1 to 1 of this function, so dx over x. Can anyone see what value that should have? So it looks a lot like this drawing here. You have to think through what this means, right? So we're integrating from 0 up to just a little epsilon shy of, from minus 1 up to epsilon shy of 0, and then from epsilon up to 1.
Should take integral from negative 1 to epsilon and epsilon to 1.
That's right. So by definition, this is the integral, it's the limit as epsilon goes to 0 of from the right of the integral from minus 1 to minus epsilon of dx over x plus the integral from epsilon to 1 of dx over x. Correct, and we could do those integrals, and we get something. Ah, yes, but someone has figured out what the answer is. And why is it 0? It is 0. You did the calculation, okay.
The left side is, you know, negative, and the right side is positive, and they should have the same area because they're mirrored.
That's right. They're just mirrors. And so they're actually not only is one positive and one negative, they're the same positive and the same negative, right? So this area and that area are exactly the same because they're obtained just by rotating around, right? Because it's a negative, it's an odd function. So this area here and that area there are the same. It's just the one's negative and one's positive. Or as noted in the chat, you could just compute and you'll get a difference of 2 logs, and you'll get which are the same. So you get 0. But we can see without doing the computation that that's equal to zero by the symmetry of the situation. So this is equal to zero since the function is odd. Since 1 over x is odd, so for each epsilon, it's already zero. So the limit is also zero. So the integral from minus 1 to minus epsilon of dx over x plus the integral from epsilon to 1 of dx over x is always equal to zero. Okay, that makes sense. So that's something that is not absolutely improperly integrable. It's not even improperly integrable, but we're still going to call it this principal value integrable. And it turns out that that's actually useful for some things, which I guess you're going to have to take my word for it now, because we're almost done with this class, and we don't have time to do any actual uses. But you'll see it, as I said, more in your complex analysis course. Okay, let's see. Let me add just a couple more examples. So what happens if I look at 1 over x squared instead of 1 over x? So once again, it's the power is even bigger, so that's even less integrable. So this is not absolutely improperly integrable. Or improperly integrable on either the intervals minus 1, 0, or 0, 1. And what happens if I take the principal value this time of the integral from minus 1 to 1 of dx over x squared?
Equals to infinity.
Yeah, that's right. So, or it doesn't exist exactly. And because this time they don't cancel, right? They're both positive. So. Maybe I'll tell you just one more example, and then I'll write down two more examples. I'll work out one and then give you one more to think about, and then we'll do it tomorrow. Sorry, on Wednesday. But what about 1 over the square root of the absolute value of x? So minus 1 to 1 of dx over, and another way to write that is absolute value of x to the 1 half. So does this one exist? So if I were to try to graph it, of course, my graph would look awfully similar because I can't really get the fine points of which power this is. So the first thing to check is maybe I can just do this integral and then do that integral separately, right? So to do that, I'd have to check whether this is improperly integrable, right? On from 0 to 1 and from minus 1 to 0. And since these are both just positive, that's the same as being absolutely improperly integrable. So what about that? Is this absolutely improperly integrable on 0, 1? So the thing to do is to look again at what we had up above. And the key is that as long as this power is less than one, then it is improperly integrable, right? And once it's and one is the break-even point where it stops being, and then once it's bigger than one, then it's not. So this one is is improperly integrable. So I can erase that space where I might have put a not. And so this is true. Hence, this exists. And you could compute what it is, okay, if you wanted to. And as I said, let me just give one more example for you to think about, and I'll do it next time. So example, let's take the integral from minus infinity to one of e to the t over t dt. And let's stick out a PV there. So just to make sure that it makes sense, what is that PV referring to? What's the value of t is a problem?
When t equals to zero.
Exactly right. And we also have this minus infinity to deal with. So we have to kind of split it up into a couple of issues. So one is this integral from minus infinity to say minus one of e to the t over t. That's an improper integral, a standard improper integral. And then there's this principal value integral from minus one to one that, as you say, runs into a problem at zero. And so this is actually, if we write it out, this is the limit as n goes to infinity of the integral from a minus n to minus one, e to the t over t dt, plus this principal value is the limit as epsilon goes to zero from the right of the sum of those two integrals, integral from minus one to minus epsilon, e to the t over t dt, plus the sum, the integral from epsilon up to one, e to the t over t dt. And this one's chosen because it's neither even nor odd, so our even and odd tricks don't quite work. So we have to do a little bit more work to figure out what's going on. But anyway, you might think about whether that's integrable. I am out of time, so I will stop the recording and stick around.